And we're back. Yes, we're back. Welcome to TA1. Everything you wanted to know about adventure racing, but maybe more other things that are interesting. So, yeah, it's been 8 months. I didn't think it was quite that long, but finally feel like I'm time to get back in the saddle. I have a little more time for a while, so... You know, we're back with a Perry Jewett, who just completed the Iditarod Trail Invitational, and it was a great little chat, so we'll talk about that. I do have a few other people lined up in the next few weeks, so we'll be getting a few episodes out. Maybe eventually we'll get to 400, but... So don't expect one every week, but you might get one every week for a while. And if I get tired, I'll take another break. So what have I been doing? Adventure races, sports car races, monster trucks, I don't know, working, balancing tires, and just a host of other things. So coming up in a week or two, head for the East Coast to shoot some races with my friend Jasper, who is getting ready to complete racing cars in all 50 states, and we're working on a little project for that. So probably have Jasper on pretty soon. And we've got some adventure racing stuff, and we got some running stuff, and we have some motorcycling stuff, so going to be a little bit of everything for everybody. So, thanks for waiting. Hope you will keep listening. Spread the word. Like, review, 5-star reviews because it helps, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, go to iTunes, go to Spotify, I think. We're on Amazon. And I'll see if I can figure out how to get this episode uploaded and out to you. So, go fast. Take chances, be safe, hit your marks, and have fun. Enjoy.
We don't want
recording
anybody
in
hangry.
Progress.
Yep.
Pardon me?
We don't want anybody hangry talking.
Nope. I started a second job at Two Wheeler Dealer, and it's kind of new to me, and it's harder work. Well, it's just new job, so got to get used to that and the whole schedule and everything, but I just got home from there and had to get a bite to eat, so appreciate it.
You're going for that employee discount, huh?
Hell yeah. Yeah. You know, besides groceries, I spend more money on bikes than probably anything else, of course.
Well, I mean, I'm not there now, but yeah, I understand that.
Yeah.
So, Perry Jewett, Iditarod Trail Invitational finisher. That sounds cool.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, it's been a lot long time I've been dreaming of doing it. So it's it still sounds weird, and I'm still coming down from the high of being there, and I'm pretty stoked on that.
Well, that's as good a place to start as any. Is what do you do now? I mean, you've had this, we'll get into all this, but you had this thing in your head for, I don't know, how many ever years, and then you do it, and you're successful at it. So, yeah, now what?
Do it again? Okay. I don't know, 1,000 mile perhaps, but my goal, was to finish it, and I did it, and whether that's successful, for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
And so I appreciate that. But yeah, it had been a 10-year-long goal, and not necessarily a goal, but I knew I could do it 10 years ago and dreamt of it, and signed up a year ago, and trained for 6 months, acquired the gear, practiced and such for about 6 months leading up to it. So now what's next?
Yeah.
Yeah, good question. Keep the ball rolling. It's, I've done a few other adventure rides or 400 plus mile multi-day events, and I'd say this was one of the biggest, just the location, the weather, the trail. all those things, the getting there and all those things is by far the biggest thing I've done. And what is next? I don't know, because now that I've done this, I feel like the sky's the limit financially, logistically, and all those things. You know, there could be the Kyrgyzstan, or there could be some Scotland's Highlands 550, but I really love winter riding, and I would love to go back to Alaska, my first trip there, and I fell in love with it.
Interesting. So what is it about winter? I mean,
the snow bike, the fat tires, the beauty of being out there in the cold, and the technical riding sometimes, you know, the thin white line, I love to be able to look around, but sometimes it's so intense on the snow trail. You're just focused on what's ahead of you, and it's mesmerizing, and just being able to survive out there and thrive in the winter is just really rewarding. And the cold temps and the winter environment just offer visuals that you don't normally see.
Interesting. So you talk about focus when you're on the trail. I mean, do you ever, you know, you're riding along and look up and realize like, oh, it's like 10 hours later.
To some degree. Yeah. An hour here, you know, sometimes it drags on, and a lot of times it flies by, you know. When I was on the Iditarod, normally I'd maybe have headphones in. I didn't out there, and I didn't miss them. You know, I might listen to a podcast. I might listen to music, and normally on a training ride, and love that.
Yeah.
But just to soak it all in, I didn't listen to any of that. And time really did fly by to some degree. You know, there was a few 17 hour days or more. And yeah, it just flew by. And the 5 days and 8 hours I was out there, I got to say, I enjoyed all but maybe four of them.
So, and what four didn't you enjoy?
The 4 hours is what I should say. I enjoyed the entire time, but the last 4 hours, like, you know, you think you're closer to the finish line. It's day five, 20 miles to go. This shouldn't take long. Well, it took a lot longer. So out of the whole thing, just getting the finish line, the typical thing, you think you're an hour out. It was one of the coldest days of the trip. It was negative 25. You're 5 days in. It was maybe one of the hardest days from Nikolai to McGrath, and trail soft. So we worked hard that day, and I think it was, you know, a little over 12 hours, and just toward the end started not taking care of myself, thinking it'd be sooner, but it wasn't a big deal. It's just, you know, knew the finish line was there, and it took longer than I expected. Maybe I finished with cold toes, frosted over body. I'm sure it was at least negative 25. And so other than that, I loved every minute.
So, I mean, you sort of lose focus in those last 4 hours, and in that quick, things sound like they could go bad. I mean, if something happened, you're on the way down. So how do you maintain that focus for 5 days?
Listen to your body, you know, number one, you know, always remember, you know, don't get behind on nutrition, hydration, you know, don't make silly mistakes, stay efficient. So you got those things to focus on, and calories and checkpoints. So you stay focused by just those simple things in life that distract you from normal everyday activities or distractions. So those consume a lot of the day, and just soaking in where you're at, the camaraderie of the people out there. So I think just those things alone really suck up a lot of your time. Just, you know, listen to your body, and hey, you got to eat, and you forget how many calories you burn right out there. So, I think part of my success was just remembering just constantly, you know, eat frequently and things that tasted good.
Yeah. So how, what percentage were you by yourself or versus riding with somebody?
Well, fortunately, I had a good friend, Ryan Haug, that I've met at some other events, Fat Pursuit, Black Hills Expedition. And we've become friends, and similar paces. And we talked about it before the race, and it worked out really well. Without it, it was just real natural. We, without even waiting for each other very often, you know, we were right there, and that was super cool. we didn't plan that, but it worked out really well. I didn't know if it'd be the first day, this, you know, or how we'd work out. But so he was always within, I don't, you know, we were there for 95% of the ride, you know, within a mile or so of each other when you're, you know, so that's, that was comforting without being planned. You know, I think people naturally fall into their groups a little bit, you know, I'm sure a lot of people are just on the gas the whole time. And there's somebody right there within a mile or two up front or in the middle, or people just intentionally group up. When you're fat biking, you're kind of alone, you know, the loud tires, being focused. You spend a lot of time alone, even if somebody's right behind you, you can't really visit with too much and you're focused on the day. But the comfort of knowing somebody's there is definitely nice. And I appreciated that.
Yeah. Do you think as a rookie that that helped?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. I mean, just having somebody there, you know, and I think just the whole event does, obviously. You've got 100 competitors and you're never too far away from somebody. I'm sure a lot of people spend a whole day or a lot of the event alone, but if they stop much, you know, you bump into people at the checkpoints, and that's definitely a safety blanket, whether it's just the whole, all the participants or just you're teamed up with somebody. There's safety in that.
Yeah, just knowing that. It would be different if you went and did it this week, right?
Certainly, or toured it on your own. So, yeah, there's a whole different element there, but you still got to ultimately take care of yourself, you know?
Yeah.
We were within, you know, we never needed each other's help for anything, obviously, or fortunately.
Yeah.
But just the fact that, you know, that there's a benefit, but... Yeah, I saw a lot of people struggling at different points along the race, and they were able to keep going, or, you know, they were self-sufficient, and that's what we should all be prepared for.
Can you, I mean, so you're riding and you see somebody, you pass somebody that, you know, you say, like you say, is struggling. Can you say anything? Or is that just something that everybody has to get through on themselves? I mean, they, you know how people are in a race, you're looking great no matter what you look like, but I don't know if that works in Alaska.
Well, I mean, I think as far as I know, participants are allowed to help other participants, no outside support. And certainly if I could have helped somebody, the woman that won, Kinsey, she, the first night, it was the coldest night, it's negative 30, and she had a double flat. You know, both tires were flat at negative 30, and it's a long push to Yetna Station, the next building, an official checkpoint. And, you know, I felt terrible leaving her. I only had, you know, but I had one tube, and she didn't need it, she said. And it's negative 30, but she looked like she was dressed for it. And, you know, I felt terrible leaving her. I let the next checkpoint know that she was coming, and they were aware of it. And somebody had already left her a tube, and she went on to finish and win, you know, and that was the first night, negative 30. She pushed till 7 a.m. You know, the race started at 2 p.m. on Sunday, the 26th of February. And she pushed straight through till she made it to Yetna and fixed that bike and kept going. So that was one example to see this woman at negative 30 alone on the river, pushing. And having to say, hey, I'll let the next check, you know, good luck. We'll see. I hope you make it. And she did. And it was an amazing story. And she went on to win the race. And that was the first night at negative 30. But she was prepared for it. She had communication. She had down pants on, big, heavy mittens, and was fit enough to walk into that station, you know, to that checkpoint, a warming hut, and fix her bike.
Yeah. So there's no... There's no change in the tire there. You got to just.
Well, she only had one tube.
So it doesn't.
And it was leaking. And at that point, to fiddle with that, the better choice might have been just to walk if you could keep it up. So what she did worked for her, and you're going to have to weigh that out. Yeah, if you can only fix one and you got two flats, it's not going to do any good to sit there. So you are pushing.
Yeah, that makes sense. So. What were your expectations going into this and plan?
Of course, just the finish was the expectation. Yeah. Would be success finishing and having fun, you know, that's a big part of it. And staying comfortable, no frostbite or getting lost, or of course. So those were my hope. That was my hope, and that worked out. So some of the strategies are, you know, I would like to start out strong, but that didn't work out as hope, you know, just to get a good start, to get to those checkpoints before the big group. And there was some navigation errors in the first portion, you know, in the first. So they just give you checkpoints for this route. There's no designated route. It's however you make it to the checkpoint. So in the first day out of Kinnick Lake, getting to Butterfly, there was multiple routes, and I probably missed the key route, which cost me some time on the first day, but you know, I'm out there for 5 days, so it didn't really matter in the big picture, but it cost us a lot of extra effort in the route we chose. And so that didn't really work out necessarily, but over time it did, you know, over 5 days we were able to regain, make up for that. And so the first couple checkpoints were more crowded than I would have liked. Would have been my strategy to get through those checkpoints, but it worked out fine.
Yeah. So is it like every race, no matter how long, 5 days, 10 days, 100 days, everybody's at max RPM and heartbeat the first mile?
Oh, yeah. I'm sure to some degree. Yeah. The butterflies kicked in. And yeah, the trail's only so wide, like, you know, just typical single track, basically, that it's not like a huge snowmobile trail at the beginning. It's just pretty, the whole trail is mostly just as wide as, you know, an extra wide snowmobile. So there's no room to pass necessarily. People are courteous. You fall into your group pretty quickly. But yeah, that was kind of, I wanted to stay ahead of like just a lot of holdups. So it worked out. It's fine.
Yeah. Yeah. I can imagine, you know, well, it's like anything, if you're in a group. So I get, free meeting ends in 10 minutes. So when we end, then we'll start another one.
Okay.
So apparently the meetings start when you start, not when you record. So.
Okay.
Well, yeah, when you're in a big group, it just, well, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go in a group. But when you have that group, I mean, you can't be stopping every 5 minutes, right? That's just too hard.
It's not worth it. Yeah.
Yeah.
No reason to stop every 5 minutes unless you got, you try to go as far as you can. There's always something to fidget with, but if you do stop, trying to make it something that's more than just one thing, you know, whether it's to take a bite, fix your tire, you know, put some air in your tire, let some tire out, take a leak, try to make it so you're not stopping every 5 minutes. But in the big picture, it didn't really matter for me too much, you know, but
But if you're with a group, when you're with a group, that happens more than when you're by yourself.
Yeah. And for the most part, it was just me. And I mean, I'm out there alone ultimately, and that decision's up to me, but I didn't really let anybody influence me, even though Ryan and my buddy and I rode together the whole race. It was just pretty independent, but it fell under the roof, or we just passed each other and kept going and do our own thing.
Yeah. That's cool. So how much of it do you get to ride? How much was pushing?
It was everything I hoped for. You know, I hoped for a hard trail, and it was actually really good. Some people said it was a tough year. There was some fresh snow. There was some wind. There was some cold temps. We were challenged on all those ends.
Yeah.
I'd say we walked maybe 25 miles. I don't think I ever walked more than 3 to 5 at one given time.
Yeah.
But, you know, 100 yards here, a quarter mile there.
Yeah,
mostly short stints. I'm pretty stubborn and like to ride. even if it takes a lecture effort, I'm just going to keep trying, which is pretty stubborn, but it just seems more efficient and ultimately, but at some point you're just off the bike and there's no choice. And that was throughout the race, you know, but I would say 80% of the course was pretty darn good, you know, for the most part, but I was expecting, you know, I didn't know if it'd be knee deep. We never had anything knee deep other than a few drifts.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say that makes it fun, but yeah, that, I'm sure that makes it fun when you get to ride it.
It's the ultimate. Yeah. And a lot of the trail is really good, you know, 30, 40 inches wide and ultra firm. Sometimes just only an inch on top of really good firm trail. And I thought it was epic and beyond my expectations as far as the quality of it. I'd hoped to see the Northern Lights, and I hope to have trail as hard as this countertop. But
yep.
And I got both those things, and to be challenging and so, and to survive in the cold, and we got it all.
Cool. How many times do you have to adjust air pressure, either let out or put some in?
Some days frequently, you know, yeah. By the hour almost, you know.
Yeah.
Some days I didn't touch my tire pressure all day, you know, just woke up and it was set and didn't need to change it. But those days that the wind blows, you're in and out of the swamps or, you know, over a lake or something frozen. But I'd say, you know, it depends on the conditions, you know, like yeah. I said, some days you don't touch it and other days you're changing it more frequently than an hour.
It, I mean, you're experienced enough, you've done enough of this. So this is maybe more of a general question, but how long does it take you to learn that stop, adjust my air pressure, take up so much time that it doesn't matter that I stopped?
Well, I'm not really, I'm kind of race touring it. So I don't worry about just stopping for, you know, those things, but
yeah,
they add up and they get kind of frustrating because I'd rather be riding than pumping up my yeah. tires, obviously. So yeah, it's just part of the equation of taking yeah. care of yourself, you know, being yeah. efficient. You know, it's just, if you want to take care of yourself, you're adjusting your tire pressure. And so ultimately why you're out there, and that's part of the lure, is when you're in this environment, you got to take care of yourself. So you don't really fret over having to stop for anything because it's probably pretty important, you know, other than yeah. I probably took 300 pictures.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a waste, but you know, 5 years from now, I'll appreciate all of them probably. But I stopped for a lot of photos, and that's probably the only frustrating thing. Other than that, it's pretty much just taking care of yourself or your bike, your equipment. So
yeah.
That's the thing that seems like a waste, but I can't.
Well, the first 24-hour race I did, we were about an hour into it, and I had to pee really bad. I'm like,
yeah.
But I'm in a race. And I'm like, you ain't going to go another 23 hours. See,
you're well hydrated.
I was well hydrated, but yeah, it's like, you got to, like you say, look at the big picture and you, well, I mean, with eating or anything, you can't put it off. You got to do it when certainly. The time comes, right?
Yeah, and not sweat it. And while you're taking care of it, if you are sweating it, try and eat something and take care of a couple chores while you're stopped.
Yeah, that's good. So, all right, let's stop this recording, and I'll start another one, and we'll talk about some equipment.
Okay.
I'll be back in a few seconds or minutes. Well, that didn't take very long.
Hey, Randy.
Yeah. Well, it didn't take too long, so that was good. So, you know, they used to have a limit, but they never did.
Uh-huh.
Recording, and now they limit you to the 40 minutes unless you want to pay. And I don't want to pay.
Good man.
Yeah. So, and I'll we are. Okay. And we are recording, because I've done that before, too. Not hit the record, but so gear. Walk me through everything you had.
Gear. I rode a titanium Y Cycles Big Iron, now Revel Bikes. They've changed their name, but I've had it since 2018. I have more miles on my fat bike than I do any of my bikes. I love that thing. And yeah, so I had it outfitted with a rear rack, Old Man Mountain rack, and panniers on the back, bar yak front roll, and Oh, negative 25 sleeping bag from Western Mountaineering Hardware or Western Mountaineering, and down pants, down coat, Whisper Light stove, you know, probably about 3,000 calories I carried at once, you know, extra, three pairs of gloves and goggles, some things I haven't ever used before with that. You know, down booties was kind of a nice thing. Yeah. Down booty, you know, going into checkpoints or where I couldn't wear my boots. I had the heavy duty 45 North Wolfgar boots with Intuition liners, vapor barriers. Some of the key items I have, I guess, were some of those things. But the down booties were nice for going into checkpoints or, you know, when you take your boots off and let them dry at night.
So, and I shouldn't ask you this, but anything that didn't work or anything you didn't need that you took?
No, I pretty much used everything except the overflow prevention items. I'd had some trash compactor bags, which are just to protect your feet and your boots from overflow.
Okay.
If you had to wade through a lot of water, and we weren't challenged by that with this year. I don't know, the cold temps or what it was or luck, but I didn't bring any waders. So I brought these trash compactor bags. And so that was actually a good choice. I would take those regardless of the conditions. So I never needed those, but I had a stove and didn't use it, but because thanks to the checkpoints and making it to those checkpoints and having enough water, I never needed to melt snow for hydration. So, but I would take it again, you know, so everything worked out pretty well. Yeah. I wouldn't pack too many things different, but you know, if you were racing it, you know, I mean, you could make it to those checkpoints. That was the beauty of it. I only slept outside once. You know, I use my sleeping bag every night, but there's generally, I slept a few hours in a checkpoint, and if they're not too crowded, it's fine. You're sleeping in a wall tent that's heated. And, you know, so the only time I needed that negative 25 sleeping bag is for security. If I had a bivy, or I did sleep out one night and it was maybe negative 10 at Roan, but, yeah, I would pretty much carry the same equipment.
Yeah. So it's obviously cold the whole time, but do you get not used to it, but do you get to the point where you're like, well, it's not that bad out, and then you find out it's minus 10 degrees.
Yeah. That does happen. You know, when it was negative 30 or whatever, I was naive maybe, or, you know, I was prepared for it to some degree, but a lot of folks got nipped when severe frostbite, and I got like a little bit of frostbite on my nose. I was really concerned about it, embarrassed, but it didn't end up being much. I didn't know it till like day three. Yeah. And I saw a little patch on my nose, and I tried to keep covered up. So I might've been a little naive when it was negative 30. And at those times I knew it was negative 30, but there was reports of negative 40. I'm sure there's colder pockets. So, you know, I had everything I needed, but you know, maybe I was a little bit naive and didn't let my mat let a little more skin get exposed than I should have, maybe taking pictures of those Aurora Borealis or whatever it was, or being caught up in it being the first day. I think that really impacted a lot of riders leaving at 2 p.m. It's in the upper teens, low 20s when we start, and then the first night by Yetna Station, it was negative 30 and on some of those rivers. So I heard a lot of frostbite. I witnessed a lot of frostbite. And I think that caught people off guard, especially being the first day and starting, you know, kind of in the heat of the day, so to speak, and it dropping so much that first night.
Yeah, interesting. So logistically, it's got to be a nightmare to get there, but I'm thinking it's got to even be more of a nightmare after you finish. So how does that all work?
Ending in McGrath or being cold last night? Yeah, ending in McGrath. Well, like I said, I've been hoping to do this race for 10 years, studied a little bit. I knew the place was remote. Well, it was more remote than I than I expected. Nicolai and some of those places, I thought there would be a store or something. There's nothing really on the course other than the checkpoints and, you know, a lodge here or there. Yeah. Rainy Pass Lodge was nice, but other than that, it's pretty much the checkpoints. So there's a few others, but ending in McGrath was, there's 300 people in McGrath. It's a small town. There are some automobiles running around, but there's definitely more snowmobile traffic. So they have to charter flights out back to Anchorage. So all the competitors are basically chartered back as they finish, pick a day, you know, to fly back. It's not every day. Well, you know, it was the charter flights getting back were pretty frequent toward the finish, but you had to coordinate, and I was kind of waiting for my bike to go because I wanted to fly home with my bike. So
yeah,
I ended up hanging in off the finish line for, 4 days almost, if you count the night I finished. But it's in a community center. There's room for a lot of people.
Yeah.
You know, you're sleeping on a floor. Maybe you have a bed. As the 1,000-mile finishers, they're kind of priority for a bed. So I had a bed first night and I gave it up for a 1,000-mile competitor that's going on. So you got to be flexible if you're going to hang out to finish.
Yeah.
But getting back wasn't none of it is super simple, but now that I've done it once, that helps out a bunch. But the first time seemed like a lot of logistics, and just kind of, if you go in there with an open mind, it kind of falls into place, but it adds up as you stay there and you get everything back. So it's a big undertaking.
Yeah. And you've got to send stuff like weeks and weeks in advance, right? For the checkpoints and stuff. So when did the race start? February 26th, you said?
Correct.
When did you start packing and sending stuff?
I think the deadline, they allow 2 drop bags. So at mile 125, there was a 5-pound drop bag that you're allowed, and mile 200 of the 350. So there's 2 drop bags allowed and under 5 pounds. And those were sent like February 18th. So I was all weighing it out, taking things out and getting the correct weight. And I passed that. And some people were sending like, 7 pounds. I heard up to 14-pound packages. So they stripped some of those items to keep them at 5 pounds and fair. Yeah. And that was kind of funny little deal. But so some people didn't know what was taken out. Luckily, mine, I weighed it down and had it under the limit and it was there. So that was kind of nice. I mean, they're just allowed, the drop bags are for consumables, you know, food, nutrition needs, or perhaps batteries or hand warmers, for example, is all that's really allowed there. No, like extra clothing, and there's no, and whatever you leave there and don't take, you basically surrender to the next riders. And after the race, I think they give it to the locals and such, but there was a lot of people leaving things behind and such, but they are allowed drop bags, and you could mail something to the finish line. I never did, you know, if you wanted to change of clothes or something, but I just used the 2 drop bags, and that was adequate.
I mean, and was it mostly food for you? And then how did you decide? Were you looking for food that you would like to eat or just calories?
Both. Yeah.
Okay.
I just kept it. I had hand warmers in there and maybe, some candy bars, some batteries, and, a backpacker meal or 2.
Okay.
And, I took some of the things. I left a lot of things behind, because I started out with 3,000 plus calories and enough batteries. And I rode in the dark every day a little, but I didn't burn a lot of batteries as I expected. So I forfeited some batteries and tried to take what I could with me. But ultimately, I only needed a few of each things I packed, but I certainly packed things that sounded good to me, things that you could eat in the winter. And I found Fig Newtons, backpacker meals. I didn't eat a lot of those, but I packed them and used 1 or 2 each day, maybe. Just to have a hot meal. But between the checkpoints, what they provide there, and the few lodges that are along the route, I didn't need as much as I expected.
Yeah. But it's nice to have it in nice to have it.
Yeah, so, it was. Yeah, and I did use things from each one and the checkpoints, and it was adequate.
Yeah. So since a lot of people watching this are going to be adventure racers, we don't want to hear you complaining that you only get 40 pounds in your gear bins now. Terry only got 40 pounds.
Holy smokes.
Yeah, and then people show up. See, this year, I think the record was like 57 pounds when they came to weigh it.
Wow. Yeah. Five is, yeah. You think of the walkers too on this course, they're allowed five, and, you know, it takes them substantially.
Wow. Yeah.
Or theoretically more time than us. So it's not a lot.
Yeah. So you didn't ride much at night. So basically how many, I could probably figure it out. You must've rode about 70 miles a day.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess if you do the math, that's about what it was. You know, there were some 30 mile days and, there was a lot of days pushing 70 and I did ride into the night every day. I believe there's only one day I didn't ride until, you know, late night. And that was, we cut the day short going over Rainy Pass, the high point. Mm-hmm. I don't know which checkpoint it is. Five maybe, but Rainy Pass Lodge, Puntilla Lake was right before the high point on the course, and probably the hardest part theoretically, particularly when we got there, they had fresh snow and wind, so I didn't want to go over it at night my first time. Plus you're at a beautiful lodge. It's the oldest hunting lodge in Alaska. They've got great food. It's not cheap, but it's well worth the price. And yeah. So I had a great time. I got there at 4 PM and didn't leave the neck till 9 AM the next day. So that was my longest break, but yeah, every day I tried to ride in the night. That was the only day we really didn't have to push it.
Yeah, well, that's nice. Does it, I'm guessing probably you're motivated enough that it's that hard to get going again after you've had a good night's sleep and warm and cozy, and but you want to finish and you're having a really good time. So
yeah, all those things combined to know it wasn't too hard, but yeah, certainly, you know, anytime you ride your bike for hard for more than 8 hours, let alone multi days, it's hard to leave the next day. And, but when you're stoked on the riding and getting the job done, getting what's ahead of you, you don't even really think about it. You just got to, you just got to wake up and keep doing it. So, yeah. I fully enjoyed it. And when it's cold, you don't know what's ahead of you and you have a 70 mile to the next checkpoint, that's unnerving, and it's new terrain. And can you pull that off with, 100 and whatever ounces of water you're carrying that day? But you always have the capabilities to take care of what's ahead. So no, I loved it all. And I enjoyed taking off each morning.
Yeah, that's cool. So is the race really an invitational or get in?
Invitational or what?
Race really an invitational? Do you have to get an invite to race?
You have to qualify.
Okay.
So theoretically, yeah, that's, yeah. I mean, you have to have a little bit of a resume or a qualifying races. Mm-hmm. So, it truly is an invitational to some degree. I mean, they didn't personally invite me by any means, but had to qualify. It's limited to 100 people. So, to some degree, yeah.
Yeah. So, where do you qualify? What's the qualifying race?
Oh, there's several. I think Arrowhead, Tascobia, maybe, and there's several. I don't want to misquote those, but the Fat Pursuit that I've done for since the first year, I've only missed one of them in the last 10 years, and that's Jay Pettervary's race in Island Park, the Fat Pursuit. And that's where I got to meet a lot of these folks. That's what first inspired me. Well, not first inspired me, but that's where I really got the bug for going to Alaska in this race. But, I've watched it since before Fat Bikes and thought it was pretty cool. But probably 10 years ago when I did the Fat Pursuit is where I was like, oh, I met Jay. I'm like, oh, I got to go do this.
And it looks to me like, because I'm part of a couple of groups, in every sport in the world, it seems like. But it seems like you can find the answers from experienced people and people that have done it before seem to be very willing to share their knowledge. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's you know, there's a ton of information out there if you're willing to delve into it, you know. So yeah, there's you know, Jay is a good example of people that'll share information or does, you know, frequently, and it's out there. You got to dig for it a little bit, but yeah. That's, you know, I can only imagine what it was like 10 or 15 years ago when, you know, people were safeguarding that, or it wasn't, you know, on the interwebs.
Yep.
It had to be a huger task, you know.
Yeah. Well, I always tell people when I first learned about adventure racing in the 90s, there was one listserv guy maintained of like of some races. And that was it. That's all the information you had. So
yeah,
we're living in good times for that. But
we are.
Old school. When you start mountain biking?
Let's see, 1985.
Okay.
Yep.
Yep. Back in the days when there was actually some mountain bike races in the area, right?
Yeah, they were good. There still are, but yeah, those were the golden age.
Yeah. So, and I mean, were you just always an outside person? Was it just, I mean, you know, mountain biking shows up and like Perry's got to do this?
Well, no, I mean, I was always a bike person. I was always riding bikes BMX since, you know, I can remember bikes when I started walking. So bikes have always been a part of my life, and the outdoors naturally fall into that, you know.
Yeah.
And as I transitioned to mountain biking, particularly, you know, anything outdoors, camping, rock climbing, ice climbing, anything outdoors and in the forest has always yeah. been a big draw to me. So yeah. It's pretty natural, I guess.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about some of your races. So what year is this going to be for the 5.0, the Dakota 5.0?
23 years.
Did you ever, when you started, were you hoping for like, maybe we can do this again after the first year?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yep. I never, you know, at 3 years, somebody asked me how long I plan to do it. And I said forever, you know, till it, but yeah, I didn't have a plan, you know, and at 3 years in, I thought, well, it's got a little momentum, and here it is 20 years later, 23 years.
Yeah. And you guys were one of the, I mean, there were a few, you know, endurance mountain bike racing. There's Leadville, and I don't know if Vail was still going, but you were really early to the endurance mountain biking series.
Yeah.
What possessed you? What made you think people wanted to ride 50 miles on a mountain bike?
Because I did, you know.
Okay.
I always favored long, big loops, you know. So I was always kind of as a cross-country racer before endurance, so to speak, if there was a time. I always preferred the longer, big, more adventure loops. And yeah. I could see the evolution coming that people wanted that. Whether they're racing, riding, or touring, a big adventure loop is more alluring. And so I guess, you know, when I started at 50 miles was an endurance fence. By today's standard, yeah. You know, 23 years later, that's a short race for a lot of folks, or they won't even consider it. And it's definitely a hard 50, and it's definitely an endurance event, but it's no ultra, so to speak, I guess. So,
yeah.
You know, I guess part of the lure is just I wanted a big loop. And
cool.
We had a trail that the Ridge Riders were building and working on, and I saw a way to finish it. I went to the Laramie Enduro in 98 or something and saw what they were doing from the community there, a downtown start up to a big loop. And I came home and like, oh, we can do that in Spearfish with what we've done here. Just let's finish this trail and make it a loop. And submitted the permits, and here we are 23 years later with now it's a designated trail, and we stood the test of time a little bit with that.
Yeah. Laramie Enduro, I haven't heard those two words for ages.
Yeah, I was that's an old one and it's really well done in Laramie. And they used to start downtown and they found, they had some getting out of town issues. So I think it starts out of town now, but they've been around. I don't even know if it's called the Laramie Enduro anymore, but that's where I conceived the idea to bring it back to Spearfish and have a downtown start to National Forest from town.
So other than the speed, what's the biggest difference from 23 years ago with the race?
The amount of food, I mean, what's different? Nothing. I mean, it's just a bunch of mountain bikers getting together, ripping it up. And, you know, the times, I can't say they're a lot faster. I mean, the technology's definitely improved on the bikes in 23 years. So, you know, but, and the times somewhat, but it's still a bunch of, you know, people that love mountain biking that show up, whether, you know, it's the pros, the Joes, the bros, and the who knows, but it's a lot of people that really used to race a lot and love this type of course that people want to hang out. And whether you go racing it, riding it, or touring it, you're kind of one big clan. So I think that's part of the lure and what keeps people coming back.
Yeah, cool. Well, I think the biggest difference is you better have your finger on the register button at what, 7 a.m., 8 a.m.?
7 a.m. on April 1st. No fooling. Yeah, it's all not quick, and I never expected that. And we've, you know, if you do trail work, you get a little help, or if you volunteer and such. So it kind of keeps the locals eligible to get in. But yeah, it's, you know, we've been fortunate it sells out, and we, you know, just as a testament, hopefully we're doing things right.
Well, it seems to be. And it seems to me that it works out for me mostly like every other year I'm here. So I think I'm here this year.
All right. Well, we missed you at the 28 below. So
I know, but you know, Florida, you know,
middle winter. Yeah.
Yeah. So you're in, well, so 28 below is your big fat bike, which race, which was what, 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago?
Yeah. March 10th.
Yep, which is always a big race. But the other one is Pine Island Gravel. So
let's
get
the next
word
one
out on that.
So we did our fat bike race, and next up is June 10th, the Pine Island Gravel Odyssey. And it's the 11th year we've hosted that.
Yeah.
And we've got 45 miles, 70, 110, and 210 in a day. So there's four lengths to choose from. We're changing some of the courses. The 70 and 110 is going to have a little new challenge to it, coming up to Cement Ridge, our fire lookout, aid station checkpoint, and I think it'll be a nice change after 11 years. So that's exciting.
You're not gonna tell us what it is yet, huh?
Oh, it's not really a secret, but, you know, I guess we got to, the permits are in place and we got to make sure we want to do it. And there's so much snow up there this year. I haven't been up there in a few months and just want to see what it's like, but to ride it, but, you know, actually a few years on that section. So I want to double check it, but I think it's going to be primo and I think we're going to go with it. But it's just going to be coming up front to Cement Ridge from the backside. Pole cabin to the summit, but it's going to add a little spice to it. I know some people, you know, majority of the people are going to be hiking for a short section, meaning, you know, 10th of a mile, maybe up to a half a mile, but I, you know, some people maybe have to hike quarter or half a mile.
Yeah. So what you're saying is Doc will be letting me know that I'm still number one again.
Number one.
Yeah, so very cool. So do you have anything, this is the bucket list question, but so I mean you're obviously looking at the 1000, but is there any other specifically, are you interested in anything where you don't have to take a 35 below sleeping bag, anything summer-ish, that kind of stuff?
Yeah, I love the Arizona Trail. I'd like to do this AZT 800. There's some scary portions of that. You know, I'm more scared of putting my bicycle on my bike and or my back and hiking through the Grand Canyon than I am negative 30 or rattlesnakes for that matter, or all the other pokey things down there. So AZT is on my bucket list, you know, and there's a lot of things, you know, just in my backyard alone. But as far as events, AZT is on there. If I can, you know, if I can save enough money to go to ITI, I could probably save enough money to do the Silk Road in Kyrgyzstan or the Highlands 550 in Scotland. Those would be bucket list things in the future I would consider. You know, and some of the things in Arkansas, but I'm mostly focused on either winter events or single track right now over like say Tour Divide or gravel or drop bar stuff. I prefer more technical riding, and so that would be my focus. So those items I mentioned would be particularly
since we're both slightly old school riders, you have a sense of a ticking clock for you. You want, you know, I got to get this stuff done while I can.
Yeah, certainly I do. Yeah. I've had a few injuries that, have already set me back, and, that, you know, I'm over 50. And so, I do feel that sense for certain, you know, life's, not for certain, and, our health isn't always a given. So I do feel the tick tock, and I want to make the most of it while I can, you know, and if it lasts longer, great. And, you know, so a little bit, but you know, you got to enjoy the present, whether that's right here in the Black Hills. I don't feel that I have to leave to go do those things. So, but certainly is, you know, just to be out there and do some of those items. I'm at a good age for that.
All right. So we're finishing up here pretty quick. Black Hills Expedition, you've done it, several times, we'll say that. How does it, compare it to the ITI because it's winter, but what's that course race tour like?
It's hard. I think it's as hard as doing ITI. Somebody asked me if the ITI 350 was the hardest thing I've done, and no, I don't, you know, and maybe it's the pace I took or the Black Hills Expedition or the Colorado Trail race, or those were probably harder. And this, maybe it's just my preparedness or the amount of time I spent in the saddle, that those were longer days, less sleep. So those things added up, making it, those were harder, I thought, you know. The Black Hills Expedition is, you know, I don't know if how many feet it is of climbing, but it's 460 miles and a lot of climbing and a lot of technical trail. And longer days and shorter nights, that, you know, and even though it was only 4 days and 17 hours, it just, maybe I was just riding a little harder, but I felt that was more fatiguing slightly.
One thing, you got so much more daylight that you kind of forces you to ride a longer day, doesn't it? Because you've got daylight.
And you know, it's my backyard essentially, and a few, you know, or just summer, so you do ride more. I don't know if that's a good excuse to ride more, but you just got a lighter bike, you can go further. I don't know what it is, but I was maybe pushing it harder.
I like that. Essentially your backyard, literally my backyard.
Thank you.
A great place. If you come to the Black Hills Expedition, be warned, at a mile, I don't know what mile we're at, but there's always a treats for everybody. So
Randy's place is sweet, right along the trail.
Right on the trail. So the only place in the world where I can shoot a race from my bed, literally. So I did one year with the Tatanka. I said, I got to do it. So I go up and I'm in the bed, just laying back there, just shooting through the window.
Cool.
It was kind of fun, but
good spot.
Great. It's been fun. I like these. I've taken a long break from doing podcasts because I ran out of cool people to talk to. So you're my first guinea pig back, and it was a good one. So I appreciate it.
Yeah, I'm always. still on the high from it. It's been, that was an amazing ride, and happy to talk a little bit about it and answer any of your questions. Or
So we're good. So, well, I probably tell June, but you know, when the big red camper shows up in your driveway, you know who it is.
You're always welcome. All right. Thanks, Randy. We appreciate it.
Appreciate you and all your races. And I still live vicariously through other people. So thanks for taking me to Alaska so I don't really have to go.
Well, it was an amazing experience. One of the best of my life. So happy to do it.
All right. All right. Goodbye.
Thanks, Randy. Hopefully I'll see you on the trail soon, and or in my driveway.